March 7th, 1995, and we're going to talk about what he remembers about Ridge Street. And one of the first things we want to know is when you first lived there and the addresses, etc. Please.
Okay. Lynn, the house on Ridge Street was, as you cross the bridge to go out on Ridge Street, it was the first house on the right. And it was sold to the city of Charlottesville around 1953 or 54 to build the fire house there. It was situated on 1 acre of land, and of course the railroad, CNO Railroad, was right beside it, and there was a driveway going down between the house and the railway, but plenty of big trees, oak trees, and lots of grass to cut, and a big garden in the back, two cherry trees, a pear tree, a strawberry patch, some raspberries, and lots of grapes. So that's what I grew up with. The house, my grandfather moved to Charlottesville and built the house in 1888. My father was born in the house in 1889. And he was...
We'll play the tapes back so you'll be able to hear.
Okay.
And you can borrow the tapes too.
When my grandfather moved here, he had been born in Rockridge County in 1842 and was in Jackson's Brigade in the Civil War and survived 5 years of that, which is amazing. But he was in prison for part of the time. Horse fell on him and he broke his leg and came home for a year, but overall he had 5 years apparently in the Confederate Army. So he opened a store on Main Street, a general store, and ran that store for a long time. He was on the school board. His name was James F. Fulton Harlan. And my father then was as I said, born in 1889 and actually born in the house. He was in World War I with the 29th Infantry Division. And my grandfather lived until 1924, so he was about 82, 83 years old when he died. Not bad in the days of no antibiotics.
Right.
The store, then my father did not run the store, and it was rebuilt and was Sears Roebuck on Main Street. You remember that name? Sears downtown.
You downtown? No, I don't remember it being downtown. I remember when it was up on West Main.
Yeah, it was for the first 20 years it was downtown, and that was the store. It was built in 1937 for Sears. And
well,
then,
where was it on Main Street? Down at the other end?
At the Vinegar Hill end.
Oh, I don't remember that. Well, that might have been before I came.
Yeah, okay. It was, it became Leggett's. Part of the store beside it was Leggett's. And then when Sears moved up on West Main Street, they took over the whole building. It was Leggett's. And in fact, my brother and sister and I just sold it, you know, to Lee Danielson.
Were you the seller?
I'm the one.
To that Lee Danielson. Listen, I just hope he can come up with all this money. He
he's
promises.
Already come up with a lot of it, you know. So he
where
has
does
to,
he get it? It's not his.
No, it isn't all his, but he's got other people in with him, I think, to make a difference. So anyway, that's the brief history on the store and the house. And remembering the house, of course, I remember a lot of things about it.
Now, first, let me interrupt just a minute. You said you were telling us about all the trees and everything.
Yeah.
And said you were brought up there, but did you go there when you were first born? Was this a whole family all lived together?
Right. No. My mother and father lived there. They got married in 1925, in January of 1925. And my mother was a nurse. She had finished in nursing school at the university in 1916, and my aunt was also a nurse and lived there. And so I was raised by both my mother and father and my aunt, who lived there with us.
Yeah, because your grandfather had died just before you were born then. Yeah.
My father didn't get married until after he died. He and my aunt really took care of me. So, yes, I was born at the University Hospital. Did you ever listen to my talk on the history of the hospital?
No. Oh, I'd love to see that.
Oh, it runs about
an
hour.
I'd love to see that.
But I was born there, so I just show one page of my medical record. Then my brother was actually born at home. I think my mother just went to labor too fast, so he was born in China at that house, which he thought was rare, but I pointed out to him that in 1940, one half of the babies born in Virginia were born at home. One half. That's a fact. That's hard to believe.
So, were then the two women and your father and mother and you two boys, right?
My sister.
Oh, when was she born?
She's her birthday is July 1st, and she's 5 and a half years old. So,
but was she born at the hospital or at
hospital,
home?
Hospital, yeah. They got up there in time for her.
Yeah. Okay.
So that, for school, it was walk to school in those days, and I don't remember in my 11 years of school missing but one day for snow reasons. Not bad, but everybody walked. And it was McGuffey Elementary School.
Right.
And then in September of 1939, I started high school in the old Midway building. And one of the things that I remember about that is people yelling extra war, because you remember World War II started on September 1st. And with radio and television, not like they are today, the newspaper put out extras, the Daily Progress and others. And so then for 1 year I went to the old Midway school, and then the new Lane High School, now County Office Building, opened in September of 1940. So I graduated from high school in 1943.
Because people just went to high school 3 years at that time.
Well, four of us is no eighth grade.
No eighth grade, that's right. It was just one.
They started the eighth grade a year after I had started high school. So both my brother and sister had the eighth grade, but I didn't. So I finished, I was 17 years old, and I went to the University of Virginia. They were on the accelerated program. This was in July of 1943.
Yeah, I was there then.
You were?
Yes, I was a graduate student.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. We might have passed
probably
each other.
Probably. You know, we had to wear hats. Remember,
it was
a coat and tie school, and you wore a hat if you were a first-year student.
Right.
I rode my bicycle lots of times, and I just parked it right outside of Alderman Library, never locked it, never worried about anything.
Oh, I know. Leave your coat and your books and all, anything, any place.
So by November I'd finished one semester, and by the 1st of March I'd finished 1 year at the university, and then I went on 9th of March, almost 51 years ago. Now, what is it? It was not it'd be 51 years after this month. It was the day I went in.
March the 9th, 1943?
44.
44, that's right. You.
So I had 1 year at the university before going in. Well, let me go back to the house a little bit and tell you what I remember about it. We had a sidewalk, which was great for riding tricycles in the early days, that ran all the way to the block and on beyond. Did you interview Beverly Hart?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Beverly Marjorie Hicks. Oh, sure.
Okay.
She was there Sunday. You didn't come?
No, I couldn't get there Sunday.
Yeah, right. But Margie was there with her husband.
Yeah. Yeah, Jerome and I were in the same class in high school.
Oh.
Well, you know, I can remember we were able to, we played a lot of
sports. And we could play football, touch football in the yard, tackle two athletes. There were hedges to cut, grass to cut, leaves to rake. And the old push lawn for when you get older, when I got older. And I did a lot of running. I remember that we had a lot of hedges over there. You could run over hedges for about four houses up. It was like doing high hurdles in college. Yeah, it was fun doing that. And I did like to run in those days.
Who lived next door to you?
Jay Brown was on a media right, and he ran a little store over in Belmont. That house also was taken down to make way for the firehouse. So the city bought two houses.
You remember his first name?
I don't think it was his first name. I remember his daughter, Neely Gray, but I don't remember his first name.
Well, that's okay.
But they got that city right. Across the street was Jack Fowler, who was Commissioner of Revenue. And on beside him was Miss Edna Bailey, Miss Lee Bailey, you know.
Yeah.
And then was Stuffing's visit the next house. Norris Stuffing. On that side. Then back on the side we were on, the next house was O.E. Hawkins, Hawkins Brothers store. And his wife, they had no children, and Maddie Thomason, who was her sister, although they didn't have any children, they, quite a few of them, these nephews actually lived there while they attended the University of Virginia. And my father and mother and aunt also had a cousin who lived in Lockbridge County, who went to the engineering school at the University of Virginia, lived with us for 4 years. They paid for his college education back in the 30s, early days. In fact, they said it was a real debate of whether, since he was going up to the university every day, whether I should go on and stop there instead of stopping in the first grade, because I'd go up with him.
You would have made it, John.
I'm sure.
You would have made it.
Anyway, I never really thought about going anywhere else. I was so interested in Virginia and the athletics, particularly football. I started going to football games. They say I went to a football game with my uncle who died in 1928-29. He took me to my first football game. Of course, I don't remember anything about that. But my aunt and father were big sports fans. Greasy Neal was a good friend of my father's who was coaching at Virginia. And so I got started very early, and my brother and I would go to the Virginia games, football games, in the late 30s by ourselves. We'd just go up there, pay 50 cents and go in.
Absolutely.
We'd go in, and the crowd was always small. And there were very many people being there. The other sport that we were really interested in was boxing.
Ooh.
Boxing was the big wintertime sport in Virginia instead of basketball in those days. And Memorial Gym would be filled by 7 and the fights would start at 8. Well, Buddy and I would go up there at 6 o'clock when they opened the doors. We'd go in, go up on the track in the balcony there at Memorial Gym, sit on the floor right above the ring. And on the track there and watch the boxing matches. And the first year that I did that was 1936, because they had the national tournament here in 1936 and 38, and we went to those. I wish I'd saved some programs from those days. It'd be interesting to have them. So with that kind of interest in athletics at Virginia, and it wasn't any surprise, I guess, that I went to UVA. The surprise probably was that after going to MCV that I came back here and stayed, because I really didn't plan to do that. But then after my administrative residency, they offered me a job. And so one thing led to another, and 39 and a half years later, I left. Well, let me go back to the house a little bit.
Yeah, I like that too.
I've got a couple pictures, but the house itself, you went out, there was a porch on the front that went all the way across the front. And then the entryway, you went in, you had a hallway, and a stairway going upstairs. And to the right, immediately on the inside, was a, what we called a parlor. That's when they had company. They used to parlor. The next room was the living room. And then, and back in the far end of that hall was a big coat rack, and there was a phone on the wall. Now, this is early, before we had lots of phones. One telephone, and that was downstairs and on the wall back there. And then beyond the living room was a dining room. And we used the dining room all the time. And then the kitchen. And the kitchen was interesting because in the kitchen we had a coal stove. And beside the coal stove was a hot water tank. And so actually running the coal stove every morning actually heated the hot water that was used the rest of the day without any problem. And we had a maid. I was actually raised by Sinie Payne.
How do you spell Sinie?
S-I-N-I-E. Sinie Hill Payne. P-A-Y-N-E. And she was there the whole time, you know. So you can say I was my aunt, my mother, and then a full-time maid. Now, she lived rent-free on a house at the back of the lot there. Which opens up on, what is that street? It's not Dyke Street. But anyway, the street is that,
Beaver
High Ridge.
Is that Oak?
I'm not sure.
No, it isn't. But I was on that street the other night. Yeah.
So we owned the lot all the way through there. She would start the fire in the morning and make biscuits every morning. Now, that's interesting, too, because being beside the railroad, during the Depression, it wasn't unusual to count as many as 60 hobos on a train, on freight cars. And there were lots of trains that went by. I love steam engines. We had the three passenger trains going each way and numerous freight trains. And then the freight trains during the Depression with the hobos on them. And so it wasn't unusual for them to stop by and have and ask for something to eat. We had a lot of that that went on, and we always had plenty of biscuits because they made them every morning. Plenty of jelly, making all kinds of jelly. I don't think I ever had any bought jelly until I was in the service, making the truth. Because everything was made at home with all the fruit we had around there. Didn't seem to me like the birds bothered the cherry trees much in those days. They were big cherry trees. They had a lot of cherries on them. But anyway, it was a kind of a nice place to grow up. There were plenty of kids to play with. And what I did, particularly when I was in high school, I organized. We didn't have a little league in those days. So we organized teams by streets. And so I organized the Ridge Street team. And we would play games against Fry Springs, Belmont, Locust Avenue, various parts of town. You know, we'd have teams and there would be people designated to sort of head up. I'd get on the phone, call all my players and get there and we're going to play Saturday morning. And, you know, it was, you had more leadership with the young kids, I think, than you have today, because you got adults running Little League today, whereas I did it in those days.
Did you play against any black children, or were black children on your team ever?
No, they weren't then. They weren't. Nor do I remember we played against them. But they were, of course, around us a lot of them. Another thing that I did, I made a little soapbox derby racer. It wasn't fancy. All I needed was a big board, 2x4s, and I'd go down to Corner's junkyard. I've got an old steering wheel, wrapped rope around the steering wheel, and it went to the 2x4 wheels on the front so you could turn it either way. And Garrett Street was pretty steep, you know, right across there. It's closed.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'd take that race over there on Garrett Street, front down the hill upon it with the steering wheel. It wasn't a fast racer, but it was kind of fun. It's something you can make yourself. That made it nice. I remember learning to ride a bicycle at a fairly early age, and yet probably wasn't all that early when you think about it. I don't know how old I was, but I probably was second or third grade. We didn't have training wheels in those days. You had to get on that bicycle and learn how to ride it. One of the things that we did in the 30s, we would go to the Lafayette Theater on Saturday morning.
I remember that theater well.
And see the cowboy show. And so, you know, and we all had our guns on. We had cap pistols and we strapped holsters down. And we pretended to shoot at each other after going to that movie. And I really, you know, in Germany, Hitler had the Hitler Youth.
Yeah.
And they had formal training. But we had cowboy shows on Saturday, and we just pretended all the time shooting at each other. So we went through, I think, the American soldier had an amateur type of training program that was equal to, at least equal to people I've talked to in Germany who were there as kids. To any of their formal programs that were run by.
And you all weren't being mean either.
No,
this was just play acting.
Now you did. We shot you. No. Can you imagine having those laser things now that you can actually
tell?
Oh my
gosh.
It's unbelievable. The electronics. So. Mm-hmm. But we did that was sort of the usual Saturday. It cost 10 cents to go to the movie. And maybe you could buy a little cup of ice cream for a nickel, which you take in. Now, they didn't have popcorn and things as much, I don't think. I don't remember that anyway. I didn't have enough money to get it. But one of the things you could do in elementary school that I did is carry newspapers. And you could carry the Daily Progress or the News Leader in the afternoon. And make a fair amount of money. The Progress was 15 cents a week, and the carrier got a nickel, and it was 6 days you have to carry the afternoon paper. It was not published on Sunday, so we would then go around and collect people. And the route that I carried was the University route, which was up on Berkeley Road.
Oh, so then how did you get up there? Ride your bike?
Bicycle. Yeah. Oh, yeah, always bicycle. Yeah. Carry the paper. Even in the rain. I remember one time it was raining hard and I came down Rugby Road and turned to go down by the rotunda and my bicycle hit the streetcar track, you know. They were not there anymore.
I remember them too.
Tipped off on that thing and slammed into the wall.
Oh my gosh.
Didn't hurt, but it was just a matter of, you know, you really have to be careful on rainy days on these streetcar tracks.
Right. But they still had the streetcars when you were growing up.
No, yeah, I remember the streetcars.
Because they were gone when I came, but the tracks were still there. I came in 1942.
They may have pulled those tracks up and used them for battle for the war. I'm not sure. But
can't remember when they took them out of the university area.
They may have paid those.
Yeah.
Were you in the education school?
No, I was in the graduate school.
Okay.
I was just telling Dee in Latin and Greek.
Oh, okay. One thing I liked about going up to the University Library, and I used it when I was in high school, is they had nice translations up there when I was taking Virgil in
right.
high school.
Oh, yeah. I know about those translations.
Yeah, we call them ponies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. To get back to Ridge Street a little bit, can you remember? Well, you told with the, how about church? Where did you all go
First
to church?
First Methodist. So it's another, just a walk down there, and Sunday school and church at First Methodist Church.
Did you go to both Sunday school and church?
We went a lot, I would say. We maybe didn't go every Sunday, but we would go to both.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday school first and then go on to church with the parents. We had very good Sunday school teachers. I remember that. It was something I really enjoyed. Another thing, that this was a little bit later, but in 1940, my aunt took my brother and me up to New Haven to see Virginia play Yale.
Oh my gosh.
I had the program. And Virginia won that game 19-14. We were probably the only, my brother-in-law, my future brother-in-law was at that game too. we were probably not very many people in Charlottesville went to the game, but this was a planned trip. We went to New Haven and then we came down to New York and went to the 1940 World's Fair.
Oh, I went to that because I lived in Philadelphia at that time.
We went to a baseball game, we went to, saw all the sites in New York City, went to, in addition to going to the fair. We spent a week in New York and then the next Saturday, we went on down to College Park and saw Virginia play Maryland. So you can see what sort of a football fan I was in 1940 doing that. My aunt was too. And then came on home. So we actually were out of school for a week, but it was a nice educational thing. I don't know whether people frown on that today or not, taking care for a week. But I for a week.
They
do that.
But they frown on everything nowadays, no matter what you do.
My father was also on the school board, and my grandfather was on the school board, and then later I was on the city school board. So we had a three-generation thing on the city school board. But it was interesting, I'll just comment on that a little bit. I remember when I was on the school board, my secretary was Judy Lynch, and she called me, and she said, I've got Mrs. So-and-so coming to see you. She wanted an appointment with you. And I said, well, check and see if she's ever been a patient here. We did. She said, I haven't been a patient here. I said, well, I wonder what she wants. It turned out that day after day, people came to see me with school problems at work, you know.
My God.
And so it was personnel. It was the same kind of stuff that I was doing at work. Sometimes the board meetings would last past midnight after 3 years I'd had it. It was no change of pace. It was just terrible, sir. And it's worse today. I know that. They get paid today. Maybe some are fighting, but I said, when everybody else has said, serve 3 years on school board, I'll be willing to serve three more. But I also felt that it wasn't as easy to be on a school board when you have children in school.
Right.
You can be much more objective if you don't have kids in school. Those are the reasons that I decided after 3 years not to seek reappointment. But I always did a lot of things in the way of civic affairs. I was in the JCs after I started, you know, in my job at the university. And then I was president of the local JC chapter. And then was part of the charter forming of the Thomas Jefferson Lions Club and president of that. One of the things that I felt was very important was to have my assistants in civic clubs. I think that that helps if you spread out in the community, because so many times people connected with university just don't know what's going on in the community and don't do anything in the community.
And some of them have never been downtown.
Never. That's right.
It's really astounding to me.
I had my own 22 rifle when I was 13 years old.
Oh, now that's interesting to know.
I know that wouldn't happen today. Of course, I had a BB gun. I had a Red Ryder BB gun before that.
At a 22 rifle at age 13.
It was a single shot 22 that cost $5. Let's see what it was. And I would go hunting. I go squirrel hunting with that. Now, that's a real challenge. Squirrel hunting with a single shot 22.
Where did you go to squirrel hunting?
Well, we have to go out in the country.
Oh, so you were out in the country.
Oh,
you couldn't shoot in the city.
We didn't shoot in the city. I don't ever remember shooting that 22. I don't think my daughter would let me do that. We had to go out. I did shoot BB guns in the country. Although we would walk. You could walk for little ways and get out of town as far as that is.
That's right, because you
walked up Andy Ridge Street.
Yeah, and that wasn't that far to go, was it, to get to the end of town? About where did Ridge Street end then?
If you look at it now, it's a little ways along where that Fifth Street extension is, but not too far.
Yeah.
Maybe about a third of the way there before you get to the end of town. once you get off this street over. And I was out that way probably in 1939. It was the spring of 39, maybe a mile from home. And we were swinging on a rope swing. I slipped, fell, broke my left arm and elbow. And when I got up, you know, I got this arm was swinging back. That's how great it was.
Oh my gosh.
So it was in April, early April, and I just made a sling of with my coat and walked home. And
then went up to
Then went up to Charlie Frankel, Bob Funston. Funston was the chairman, but I think Charlie Frankel took care of me then. I used to kid him about it. They X-rayed it and set it, and then he set it up like this because he was in the elbow, and I had it on for 6 weeks. And then when you took the cast off, I couldn't get my arm any straighter than this. So I had to go through a lot of physical therapy and wait on the bar. And you may not notice it now, but that's the reason I'm not a good golfer, I tell people, because I can't get this arm any straighter than that. Didn't keep me from being in the service. Nobody ever noticed. Now, we had a straight concrete sidewalk that went right into the front door, and then a concrete walk around to a side porch. It was we referred to it as a cellar, a basement, but it basically just had a coal furnace in it. And it was not under the whole house, but it was under enough room in there to have the furnace that heated the radiators in the house. You went into a porch to go into the front of the house, which ran the whole length of the house. And then as you entered the entryway, there was a hallway and the steps immediately on your left going upstairs. Immediately to your right after you entered was a living room that we call the parlor, which had the antique furniture in it, and it was just for the company when they came. And then the next room was a living room, and that had a big radio in it. Because radio was, of course, what we all listened to. The programs of during the war, Amos and Andy, and so forth. The Washington Redskins on Sunday. It was, in fact, 1941, Sunday of 1941, when the word that Japan had bombed Pearl Harbor, interrupted what we always had was a meal at the middle of the day on Sunday, and listened to the Redskins on the radio. Sometimes with that big radio and my interest in baseball, I would try to get a New York station, which occasionally you could get, and I would listen to the Brooklyn Dodgers or one of the New York teams. I started keeping the old times, and in addition to the Richmond paper and the Daily Progress. So I would always be interested in the sports section. And one of the things that I did, I would look at the New York Times batting averages of my favorite baseball players. And then I'd keep up with it during the week. And no calculators, yet to do long division. But I never had any problem with percentages. I mean, I know what percentages are, and when I coached Little League, I wanted to make sure that my kids kept their own batting averages so the boys would never worry about what a percentage was anymore.
And I thought,
and so it's sort of fun as they keep their own batting averages. But then beyond the living room, there was the dining room, which had a big dining room, too. And we had company a lot. Particularly at Sunday, we'd always have company there, it seemed like. And my mother exposed us to a lot of different meats. I mean, you know, I liked everything. We had, in those days, we had veal, which I don't think was that expensive, both veal cutlets and veal roast. She felt that it was important to, from the standpoint of the iron, to have liver, and I loved them. And I mean, liver was a treat that she would give us at breakfast once a week, usually on Sunday morning, maybe Saturday. But one slice of veal, which was 15 cents a pound. I remember some of these things.
I think you may have been the only child in the United States who liked liver.
I probably was. But my brother and sister and I all loved liver. I like veal liver. you know, and it's expensive. It's like almost $7 a pound over in China, too. You get it. And occasionally I get it, but chicken livers I love, and it's a lot easier just to eat chicken livers. So I do eat livers, illegal, of course, it's cholesterol, but I like liver. So I'm exposed to pork, veal, liver, roast, steak. Oh, we just, it was a very, she was charged. She had plenty of
turkeys to dinner.
I remember. And chicken and turkey. But chicken, we had cousins staying up with us, more or less our age, boy, two boys. And so we were sitting there, they were spending a week with us in the summer. And Hal wasn't eating. And my mother said, "Why aren't you eating, Hal?" And he said, "I'm waiting for the white meat." Well, you know, we weren't allowed to just have white meat. We had to rotate. I mean, we like white meat and dark meat. In fact, I prefer the leg today. Much prefer the leg to the breast, as far as that's concerned. But that's the way we were raised, you know. And she said, "Well, when you're up here, you're going to have to eat dark meat."
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, anyway. So then, and then the kitchen had a coal stove and our maid, and she lived on the property, and so she would start that up every morning, make biscuits, hot biscuits in the morning. She made a lot of other good things too, like crackling bread. Oh, I wish I had the recipe for that. Outstanding crackling bread. A million calories, but outstanding. And the hot water tank beside that, which was heated by using that. Then we had a gas stove in the kitchen, and the gas stove was used to cook the evening meal, and I had an oven in it too. And the interesting thing about the gas stove was that in order to run the stove, and you put quarters in when you ran out of gas. Did you get that?
No, I don't remember.
There was a little thing in there that when the gas would run low, then you just put another quarter in, and so that's the way you got your gas for the gas stove.
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And so then they'd come along and pick up the quarters periodically. We used to get a lot of buttermilk, and Judge Michael's aunt delivered buttermilk to us every week.
Was she a
two
farmer?
2.5 gallons. They lived down, evidently they had, she lived down in near Prophet down in that area.
Oh.
And she drove in and brought buttermilk. And of course, we used a lot of buttermilk making biscuits and things like that.
And drank it, too.
Yeah. I never really cared that much for drinking it.
I love buttermilk.
But I do like buttermilk dressing, so I probably wouldn't mind drinking it now either.
Now, this was in addition to the regular milk. You said you had milk delivery.
Yes, the regular delivery from the Monticello Dairy we had. But in addition to that, we got buttermilk. Miss Michael had brought that buttermilk.
So the Monticello.
Yeah, I'm sure the Monticello Dairy probably had it. You know, they had, it was delivered in bottles and it wasn't homogenized, so the cream was at the top. I know that in Richmond there was a dairy down there that had a sort of a neck, and then it spread out again, and so then they had a little plastic thing you could put down in it and get your cream off of it. You remember that?
No.
But they did have that in Richmond, but not in Charlottesville. Charlottesville was just a straight flour. Pepsi was my favorite drink, or a big drink, a big grape. 12-ounce Pepsi cost a nickel. If you seemed like you were getting more than you did when you got an 8-ounce Coke in a bottle, right? I like Pepsi Cola. The other thing I remember is walk over across near Midway, and there was a bakery over there, and they had these pastries that were round and filled with cream.
Cream horns, they called it.
Yeah, cream
horns. Oh, one of my favorites.
They didn't cost much either, but I mean, one of those things.
Was that in Vinegar Hill, the bakery?
Right down, it was run by a Smith family.
Were they black?
No, they were white, and they lived up near Venable Street, in that general area.
Well, go on about the house, so about then, the porch.
So then there was a screen porch in the back. And we had two cherry trees, a large grape arbor, a strawberry and patch and raspberry bushes and a pear tree. And although we didn't have peaches, so we worked with peaches, my mother and my aunt canned peaches and made peach pickle every summer. So we were exposed to a lot of fruit and made a lot of desserts, and in fact made some wine too. I remember we had homemade wine. Probably made some of that during the Depression. It wasn't illegal. Well, there was one cute story. I remember my father telling me one time that he was out buying some moonshine, I guess. Saw one of the policemen in town the next day. He said, "We saw you last night. What do you mean you saw me?" He said, "We saw you out there buying." He said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, we saw you." He said, "We knew you, and we didn't want to get you involved in this, but we raided that place right after you brought it to us."
Oh, dear.
The upstairs then had a had four bedrooms, and as I said, my aunt Emma lived there, and she was working as a nurse at the university. And my mother did not continue nursing after we were born; she was a homemaker after that. So she did the evening and Sunday cooking, and so that we had one bathroom at the end of the hall back there. There was an attic in the house, and the front half of the house had three or four rooms in it.
You didn't tell me about the attic.
No, I wouldn't mention that. We enjoyed going up there and started playing when we were kids.
And you said there was this open sleeping porch that you mentioned.
And we had a sleeping porch, which again was taken down when I was very young. I know that it was sort of, it was the kind of thing that a lot of families had in those days with lots of windows, so it was the air conditioning you hoped in the summertime. And that I don't know what I mentioned, Buddy and I playing with David Gleason a lot.
Yeah, we did.
And that may not be on tape either, but I remember David and Nancy and my mother and father had their big sleeping porch on the back of their house, and they would sleep out there in the summertime too with four beds. They all had their rooms otherwise, but when it was so hot, that's the place they would go. And that house is still there too. You know, it's a little, it's a nursery thing.
The daycare center.
Yes,
is
daycare.
That the Barrett Daycare
That's
Center?
That's the Barrett Daycare Center. Right. Is the house that in police.
I mentioned about the roller skates, because that was
important. Now, the big thing in addition to riding bicycles was roller skates. Of course, they were the plant on roller skates. And I went through a lot of bicycle wheels, that is, tires, wore a lot of wheels on roller skates. And we would skate all over town, particularly going up to the university and skate through the down around the lawn in that area. And then I also talked a little bit, I think, about carrying the daily progress. And the road I had was up on Rugby Road. And the progress was nice to carry because everybody took it, and you didn't have that far to go. I carried a substitute carried the news leader on occasion, but didn't as many people take the news leader,
no.
So you'd have to have a much wider territory
right.
to get that. But the daily progress in the 30s, when I was carrying it, was 15 cents a week, and if you had 50, maybe 50 people you would carry, well, you made a pretty good little amount of money for those days, because I got a nickel a week, and the progress got 10 cents a week. I guess the only problem you had occasionally was making sure people were at home to pay that 15
right.
cents.
Right.
We would also pick up scrap metal and take it that we could find it, take it down to Corner's junkyard, which wasn't too far away either. And then I'd also use them a lot to buy things when I was making the soap box dirty razor. The upstairs, and I'm in the attic, that finishes the house. The side porch, let me go back to the ice. We had an ice box in a little area off the side porch, a little room there. And we put up a card for the delivery of Elliott Ice. And the card was, whichever number was up on top was the amount of pounds they came in, either 175, 50, or 25. And I don't remember the exact year, but we got an electric refrigerator when they first started coming out, somewhere around in the middle 30s, I remember
that. You said 1935 or 36.
I think that's right. It would be about the right time that the electric refrigerator started coming out.
Well, I think that's probably this is what we needed to know.
Yeah, yeah, I'll show you a couple of pictures.
Oh, yes. I'll just see the picture.
Now, here's the house. There's the